You're listening to the Missional Marketing Podcast, a show for church leaders, church communications professionals, and ministry volunteers. Our goal is to help your church grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications.
Your Google reviews matter way more than anything you post on social media or anything that you write on your website, because the people that you're trying to reach are going to look at your reviews the same way you read reviews when you're picking a hotel or a product you're buying on Amazon. We look at reviews, right? Welcome to another episode of the Missional Marketing Podcast. I believe, Mr. Hamrock, if I've done the math correctly, that this is the 168th episode of our podcast. Can you believe that?
It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not sure if my math is 100% correct, but I'm going to call it. Yeah, I'm going to call it the 168th episode. Maybe in 2025 we will hit 200 if we can get our act together, record a few more of these. Maybe we'll hit 200 this year. If you happen to be new to the podcast, you're tuning in for the first time. Our goal with this podcast is to help churches grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications. Jason Hamrock here with me is the CEO of Missional Marketing. I am the brand director for Missional Marketing. And we have the privilege of just literally spending hundreds of hours every month on Zoom calls with churches, trying to help them get better at what they're doing, primarily online, with their internal and their external communications to reach more people for Jesus. That's our goal. We hope that you're listening to this podcast and that is your goal as well.
Yeah, it's a good goal to have.
Yeah. So what we're going to do in this episode, we've done a few of these in the past, but we're going to call this a burning questions episode. Mm-hmm. From time to time, we get questions from folks who want to pick our brain on different topics. And so a while back, I started putting together a Google sheet with some of the questions that we get asked. And we're going to answer a few of those questions that hopefully will be relevant to those of you who are listening or watching this episode today. Our format here is it's a little bit of ping pong. I'm going to ask Jason a couple of questions. He's going to ask me a couple of questions off of our sheet. And then we're going to have an opportunity to sort of I would use the term rebuttal, but that's really like a debate. We're not really debating. We're just going to bounce the ideas back and forth off of each other and share our own experiences. So, Jason, would you like to ask the first question today, or would you like me to ask the first question?
You always put me on the spot, so this time I get to put you on the spot.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Here we go. This is one of the questions that I think is going to be good. Okay. What marketing strategies are appropriate for a church setting? This pastor who's asking this might be unsure about specific tactics and how they will fit within a faith-based context. So marketing strategies that are appropriate for a church setting.
Wow. That's a really big question. I knew it was on the sheet. I really didn't think you would go there. All right. I guess it depends on how you want to use the term or how you want to define the term tactic. We at Missional Marketing, even though the name of our company is Missional Marketing, you and I, number of years ago, probably 4, 5, 6 years ago, really started using the terminology digital outreach versus digital marketing. Because essentially what marketing is it's outreach. We're trying to introduce our church to people who don't yet know our church, so that we can start a relationship with them. And then once we start that relationship with them, we want to then introduce them to the most important relationship they can have, which is the person of Jesus, right? That's the name of the game here. So when it comes to specific tactics, I will say, let me just kind of boil it down to something that I think is not necessarily an ethical question, more as much as it is maybe an effectiveness question. But I would say, number one, you always want to promote who you really are and what you really offer. We should never have any bait and switch. You should never be promising something that you can't deliver. I don't see many churches doing things like that, although you've talked about this a lot on our podcast, especially as it relates to websites. Don't use images of people in your advertising that don't reflect who your community actually is. If your church is, all people over 50, don't use images of young families with kids if that doesn't represent who you are. Even though I know it might be who you want to reach, you've got to be authentic about who you are. And, I could kind of expand on that, but I don't necessarily think that I need to. So I think first and foremost, it is be authentic in your marketing strategies, communicating who you are and what you actually offer. But more importantly than that, I think it's communicating to the audience you're trying to reach and marketing in a way that communicates to them that you understand what their needs are, what their pain points are in life, and that you have a solution, or you at least have a community in which they can explore getting a solution to some of those challenges that they might be facing in life. So, you know, whether you're talking about traditional marketing, such as mailers or billboards or posters or signage around your community, or you're talking about, you know, Facebook ads, Google Display ads, YouTube ads, whatever you might be doing online, those are two of the things that I think from a tactical standpoint, I'd want to just run through the filter. Number one, be authentic to who we are, no bait and switch. And secondly, know and understand who your audience is and what their real needs are and market specifically to that.
Yeah, that's good. I'll piggyback on, take a little bit of a different angle that I think I get this often, and it's usually from a little bit smaller churches, but not always. And that is, you know, there's a pushback. Well, we shouldn't be marketing. I push right back to them. Really? Why is that? Well, because. Well, that's not the greatest thinking out there, because the best way that we share the gospel is by us sharing the gospel. Well, marketing's not a four-letter word. I know that some churches will make it out to be that. It's not. But we will do anything short of sin to share the gospel. And the best way to do that really is in the context of relationships. And sometimes what you need to do is you need to go out and you need to let people know that God loves you. There is a plan that he has for your life. And you just might be talking to someone who hasn't really thought about that. Well, is that marketing, or would you even call that sales? Another word that's kind of like a little bit like dicey. Well, I'll tell you, some of the best salespeople I know are pastors. They are so gifted at communicating, and they don't have to really convince you because the gospel is true, but they're really good at getting you to go get motivated to go, I want to be a disciple, which is I want to be a follower of Jesus. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And so when I think about the context of marketing, I don't go there at all. I push back to say, we will do anything we can in the power of what we have, short of sin, to share and engage people to let them know that there's a God who loves them and there's an answer to their problems. And any church that says, "Now we're not interested in that," I'm going, I think you need to look yourself in the mirror and go, yeah, what would it take? And I'll just tell you, what are people that are unchurched and de-churched? You mentioned it. What do those people do? They spend all kinds of times on this. Mm-hmm. They've got this in their hands. I'm holding it on my iPhone, right? And this is technology that you can get in front of people and let them know your message. And so for me, marketing is about being strategic about sharing the gospel in a way that's going to invite people, let them know that meet them where they are, let them know that they're loved and they're invited. And now you want to break that. You said kind of break down into different strategies. Yeah, we can talk about traditional versus digital. But let's just come to the realization that marketing itself is incredible. We go and we share, we go and we invite, and that's what we're called to do. And that's what our leader challenged us with.
Yeah. I mean, we need opportunity to communicate the gospel to people. Faith comes by hearing. So people need to hear the gospel. And if we don't have if we don't have an audience to whom to share the gospel, then who are we going to reach for Jesus?
Nobody.
So, in the marketplace outside of the church, we've used this terminology a lot as well, is that people will buy from you when they know you, like you, and trust you.
Yeah.
And marketing, when you really look at the way great marketing companies market, is that they're trying to move you on a journey of knowledge and just basic information to liking them, to ultimately trusting them. And that's where we want to go with the relationships with people that God has called us to reach in our community. We want them, number one, to know that we exist. Then we want them to like us enough to build trust with us so that we can then communicate who we are and who our Savior is and give them a reason to ask about the hope that we have. If we don't have a relationship with them, they're probably not ever going to ask. So Yep. Thank you for your insights on that. My turn to ask you a question, all right? This is one that I know will be near and dear to your heart because you live in this space every day. Jason, what strategies can help our church's website convert website visitors into first-time attendees?
Oh, man, I could talk for hours on this one. So I'll go quick. Well, do an exercise, listeners. Take a look at your church website. Is it a brochure about the church or does it actually engage you? Okay. So here's kind of a reality that we just know this to be true. And that is when someone's thinking about going to church, and by the way, that is up and to the right, the curiosity about spiritual things, Bible sales are up. I mean, there's a lot of people who are going, I'm kind of done with the way that we've been going. I'm curious. I want to know. So they're Googling churches near me. They're looking for churches. Guess what they're doing? They're going to your website and they're investigating you and they're checking you out. They don't know you, probably don't trust you because they don't know you. And so there's a season of time where they're going to, if they like you, they're going to watch and engage for a while before they have that trust and confidence to show up in person. We all know this to be true. That little range can be anywhere from a few weeks to a few months to a year. And I'll tell you, here's a great exercise to do. When you have new people show up, you might ask them, you know, what brought you here today? And there's maybe a drop down like a friend, or they got something in the mail, or they drove by. That's great. Learn that. Ask another question. How long have you been engaged with our church? You're gonna be shocked. Okay. So the answer to that could be on average 6 months. So it begs the question, what are you doing on your website to move people toward action to attend? Because I mean, that's the goal. You know, you're not trying to, it'd be great, but you're not trying to save them with a website experience, right? You can't baptize them with a website experience. You know, you can't get them into a group with a website experience. The goal kind of is to paint the picture of all that, but to move them towards attending, sitting in a seat. That we could just say there's lots of goals, but that's a big goal, right? That's get them into a seat. So the question is your website positioning yourself to be the church that they're going to say, yes, I want to go check these guys out and I want to plan my visit? So that's a great question to ask. Now, there's a lot of different practices and different methods and tools that you can add to your website that's going to improve that. One of the easiest things is to get them to identify themselves with some kind of plan a visit form that's very easy to fill out, or perhaps a downloadable. You know, they might download something in exchange for a name and an email. Like send me the an email that tells me all the details I know, but I'm ready to plan my visit. What's your name and email? You just captured a lead. Somebody's interested and you now know who they are. They know you. And so that's a great one. Or maybe there's a download for, how to know that Jesus loves you in 3 minutes. You know, it's a PDF that you wrote from your pastor or something like that. And you had it's called gated content. You asked for their name and email. So there's different tactics that you can use. But my question, we always just kind of assume, if I just give you the information, I'm going to hope you show up. And that happens. I mean, that happens. We want to be clear and we want to be very forthcoming on what to expect when you attend our church and stuff like that on a weekend. But I think there's some other great subtle, I don't want to say hidden, but subtle tactics you can use to try and gain some leads so that you can connect with people and nurture that relationship. Because if we can close that gap from 7 or 8 months down to a handful of weeks, it's going to be better for you.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of these strategies in previous episodes, and I'm just going to hit kind of a couple of points here. One is going back to do a real evaluation of your website and asking the question of how much your website suffers from curse of knowledge. This is a real problem in the church, is that we expect people to know and understand what we mean by certain things. We expect people to actually be ready to attend a weekend worship service once they get to our website. Yeah. And the reality is more and more people in our community have less and less familiarity with what church is, why it's important, what the benefit would be of showing up on a Sunday versus just sitting at home and watching a sermon online or a live stream. And so I think it's really important, number one, going back to the point that I was talking about in the marketing strategies earlier, is know your audience. You really, really, really need to know your audience well, know the target, know who God is calling you to reach, dial it in very, very specifically, and then go through your website with a fine-tooth comb and ask yourself the question, is the content that we have on this website helping or hindering a person's decision-making about whether our church is the right fit for them or not? And so I think that churches just need to be honest with themselves, is that even the best church websites that I look at still communicate things in a way that assumes that the person who's on the website has a certain understanding of the whole church culture. And I think less and less people do. To piggyback on what you were saying there just a moment ago, Jason, about making that connection online. If we think about our marketing strategies as being a way of starting new relationships, you can actually start a new relationship with someone from your website. As long as they remain anonymous, you can't. And so here's an example. I was on a call with a church the other day here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that they've been doing marketing with us for about a year. We're generating a lot of new visitor traffic to their website as a result of the marketing efforts that they're putting in. But we determined that they have a plan of visit page, which I know that there are some church marketing experts out there that say the plan of visit page is dead, but I am convinced that it's still alive and well and very necessary. Yeah. And this particular church, which is not a huge church, had, I think the number was something like 250 new visitors click to their plan of visit page in the month of February. So if you think about that, there's 28 days in February. They had 250 people click to that plan of visit page. That's almost 10 people daily. Yeah. But in February, those 250 people were completely anonymous clicks because no one self-identified. At the end of February, they added a call to action on that plan of visit page that said, let us send you a pre-visit email. And just like you were talking about just a moment ago. Hmm. And since the beginning of March, which at the time that you and I are recording this, it's late March now, they were 2 weeks into March and they'd already received, I think, 3 or 4 of those forms filled out. Now, it's a small percentage, but I tell you what, they have a much better chance of moving those people from being an anonymous website visitor to an in-person attendee because they have a name and an email address now, and they can send out some high-quality emails offering additional content, more next steps to help that person eventually have the courage to show up on a Sunday morning, which is ultimately their goal. But as long as those guests on the website remain anonymous, it's really difficult for you to know how you can help them take next steps towards an in-person visit.
Well, I'll tell you, like, so somebody might push back and say, well, they might have showed up anyway.
Yeah.
We don't know that. Of those 250, we don't know how many showed up. But if you can, and here's the thing about that. They know us. We don't know them. They've been dating us. Mm-hmm. We have no idea we're on a date.
Which is really creepy.
Right? But I mean, it's kind of like true. Yeah. Like, they're stalking us. They're watching us. We have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
So just by doing that and getting 3 or 4, and you know, it's only been a couple weeks, so maybe by the end of the month they have 5 or 6 brand new families, and it could be a single person, but it's probably, you know, probably a family that now you have in your database that you can nurture that relationship. When they do show up, they're like, yeah, how you doing? I mean, you have a relationship with them more than just, hey, welcome to our church, nice to meet you. And they're like, well, yeah, we know who you are.
Yeah.
You don't know who I am? No, because there's no way. So it's kind of like moving the relationship into their court a little bit before we expect them to show up to church. So, yeah. And it might help convince them to attend. So it's not guaranteed that those 250 are going to show up. Of course, not all are going to show up, but even those 3 or 4, they filled out a form. You still want to work it. You don't want to just have them fill out a form and you don't follow up. Don't ever do that. That'd be really bad. So, okay. All right. Let's move on. Okay. This is kind of in the same context a little bit, but where do we start? where do we start? Where there are so many things, you know, Google, social media, ads, SEO, leads, not everything can be the most important. So Bart, if I'm a church and I'm kind of doing all this stuff, but I don't really do it really, really well, where do I start?
Well, I'm gonna quote you on this, and I believe that you would probably tell people to start with the website because it's the one piece of digital real estate that you own. So you, as much as you might like to think you own your Facebook account or your YouTube account, you don't own those, but you own your website. So first and foremost, you've got to get your house in order when it comes to your website. So all the things that we've just spent the last 8 minutes talking about, go and do that. In fact, I'm gonna link in the show notes to an episode that you and I recorded 2 or 3 years ago. I think it's called like 4 things or 5 things to rethink about your church website. And we kind of walk through some very specific things. And that podcast episode, I think, has helped a lot of other people. So I'll link to that one in the show notes. But first and foremost, get your social or get your website in order. And then I would kind of focus on this. The goal is ultimately if the, you know, we've used so many different analogies about what the website is. It went, you know, it for a while we were calling it the front door. I don't even think your website is the front door anymore. I think it's kind of the foyer. That's what they say in non-Texan. In Texas, we call it a foyer. We call it a foyer. What do you say in Arizona? Do you say foyer or foyer?
Foyer. Yeah, there's foyer.
I live in Canada. I lived in Canada for 20 years, and my Canadian friends would mock me for saying foyer because it's foyer. It's a French word, right? It's the lobby. It's the lobby. Your website is really more like a lobby because you have so much more content. You've got live streams. You've got videos. It's so much more informative than it used to be. If it's just a front door, it's just a brochure. Right. But your Google Business Profile, your social media accounts, that's really where people oftentimes are going to have their first encounter with you. The goal ought to be moving those people from social media or your Google Business Profile, which I will liken to like the front porch, into that living room space. Yeah. So wherever you're going to spend your energy as it relates to creating social media content, creating YouTube content, running ads, the goal really always ought to be drive more traffic to my website. I see very, very few churches leveraging their social media accounts effectively when it comes to moving people towards the website. Some are doing it, especially as it relates to sermon-related content or ministry-related content. A lot of churches will focus primarily on social for the likes and the shares and the comments there, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It gives you the dopamine rush when your post gets 48 likes and 22 shares and you can pat yourself on the back and go, I'm good. But really what we're trying to do is move people from the social accounts to the website. And with the algorithms of Meta right now being so much more of a discovery algorithm, more and more people who don't yet follow your social channels are getting exposure to your content. So I'm always thinking about how do I move people from the social channels to my website? And so that's really is in the little work that I do with our church when it comes to these types of things, that's the goal. I'm going to prioritize the things that I think are ultimately going to help me get people to my website. So I'll kind of leave that there and let you pick up on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the website is the only digital tool you own, and you really, when you have an engaging website, you've got somebody who's got one foot in the foyer and one foot in the living room.
Or is that the foyer? The foyer. Sure. Okay, sorry.
Because you're sharing content. They're watching online and they're watching worship and they're seeing the announcements on stage and they can hear the pastor preach and, you know, they can see stories if you actually, you know, share stories of changed lives. I mean, they're in the living room. And we got to treat it that way because they're invited. Now, we don't want them to stay in the living room, right? The goal is to get them into the kitchen, right? That's where community and that's where family happens. So that's right, Bart. I think you got to get your, I'd say while you're working on your website, which again, I've said this a lot of times, there's got to be a continuity. You said this. So I want to see continuity from any kind of top of funnel stuff. If people are Googling you and they go to your Google Business Profile, to getting to your website, to then showing up in person, to walking, you know, going to the parking lot, walking up, checking kids in, walking into the lobby, walking the worship. There should be continuity, consistency of the same kind of brand that you have. So different topic, but that's really important. But start with your website, but also pay attention to your Google Business Profile. Everybody goes to Google. Everybody goes to Google. A lot of people don't go to social media. They just don't, but some do. But most people go to Google. And so your Google Business Profile is a phenomenal way to have photos and images that match your brand. Have videos. You guys, I look at so many churches' Google Business Profiles and I'll click on photos, do this. And then there'll be a little button, if you have them, for videos. Sometimes there's no videos on there. Going, what are you doing? I look at your social media, I see all kinds of like sermon snippets. Add that to your Google Business Profile. Imagine somebody who's checking out a church and they're looking at photos. They like what they see. They click on videos and there's your pastor having a 30-second like mic drop moment. Like, that was good stuff he just said. Why wouldn't you want to put that on Google? You put it on social media. Why wouldn't you put it on Google where everybody who's checking out your church can watch a bunch of those?
I'll answer that question. You're asking the question hypothetically, but I'm going to speak for all of the communications directors that are listening to this right now. There's one of two reasons that they're not sharing them on Google. One, didn't know I could. Two, never think about it. I've had conversations with multiple comms directors this week and simply said, why don't you just put a to-do on your calendar on the first day of every month and just put GBP. Spend 30 minutes on your Google Business Profile once a month, add a few new photos, update your events, respond to reviews, email or text a few people out and invite them to share their story in a review. Give it 30 minutes a month. If you give it 30 minutes a month, I guarantee you Google will reward you with more local SEO juice. You will show up in more searches, more people. I love reviews. We're not talking about reviews, but I'll use reviews here. Proverbs 27:2. Oh, I hope that's right. Proverbs 27:2 says, let the lips of someone else praise you and not from your own mouth. Your Google reviews matter way more than anything you post on social media or anything that you write on your website. Because the people that you're trying to reach are going to look at your reviews the same way you read reviews when you're picking a hotel or a product you're buying on Amazon. Look at reviews, right?
You see a bunch of like, don't eat that food or don't go there. Tacos were horrible. Everything was cold. We had dirty utensils. Are you going to take your spouse to that restaurant? No. I mean, no, you wouldn't. You'd go find the next one that says, oh, amazing experience. You know, best staff, food was phenomenal. I want to experience that. Church is no different, people. You got to get good reviews that actually help you get 5-star reviews from your people about bragging about their church. Man, you're missing out on that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the last question of the day, and it's not on the sheet because it's going to be a pickup of what we're talking about here. Okay, Jason, you are harping on reviews. Here's my question. It's going to be two parts. One, well, how do I get more people to leave reviews without it feeling cringy? And two, what do I do when I get a really bad review? How do I navigate this space? What's your experience there, Jason?
Well, first of all, in the context of Google, they want to know you're minding your business. You're taking care of it. You're minding your business. You're in your business. You're in your business profile, your Google Business Profile. You have one. You may not even know you have one. Go Google the name of your church. You'll see it right there. And if you're not an owner of it, you need access to it. Because that's how you, once you become an owner, that's how you can respond to or ask for reviews. And so Google wants to see you getting into it. You kind of said there kind of a cool strategy is like once a month. Yes. I kind of like to do it several times a month because, you know, as you're logging in, Google's watching. They've watched that you've logged in. They're going, this business owner cares about their business. So adding those photos, adding those videos, adding those events. Now you talked about reviews. There's a little section in there that says, you know, you can get a review. And if you click on it, there's a little link. You can add it to your e-newsletter if you guys send one out, or you can add it to your social media, you know, if you want to do that. But the goal is don't get 40 reviews in 3 days. And then don't touch it again for 6 months. The goal is try and get like 3 or 4 or 5 a month. You just kind of want them organically, but you want to keep growing in your reviews. I'll look at a church's review like, hey, you have 57 reviews. go back to last year. You had 57 reviews last year. So you must have did something like push them up and then that's it. So don't do that. That's not a good method. That's not good for the algorithm. It's just a handful of views. So what I do, I'd stick it in e-news like once a month or twice a month. I definitely would. I'd go to our staff and say, hey, staff, can, you know, over the next couple few weeks, would you mind just writing a review about the church you work at? Start there. Go to some of your key leaders. Go to your elder board. You know, not all at the same time, kind of spread it out. But the goal is to get your congregation to write a 5-star review. And if you just kind of sprinkle that into your newsletter or you just send it out on social media every now and then, the goal is to get a handful of reviews every now and then. So that's what I would do. Now, you asked a question, and this is so important. So, so, so important. Every single review you get, you respond. Good, bad, or ugly, you respond. Ideally, you respond in a really timely manner, especially if you get a bad review. Don't wait a month. Do it like you see that, you do it the next day, that day or the next day, and you're responding. And here's why. Number one, Google's watching. So that helps your algorithm. Number two, I'm going to probably, or if I'm a user in the future, I'm going to read what that user had to say. And they might've been just a jerk or they might've been legitimate. How did you respond? By not responding speaks volumes to me rather than seeing a response. Does this make sense? You don't want to not respond just because it's a bad review. So in a timely manner, you want to love on that person. Obviously, the response needs to be like, hey, I'm so sorry. You know, you had that experience. That's just not what our intentions were. And we'd love to make it up to you. If there's a way that we could sit down and talk about it, please, we'll come to you or however we can serve you. We care about people. That's what our church is about. And we just want to show the love of Jesus to everybody, but we're not perfect. You know, maybe that kind of response, you just diffuse anything that anybody would have said negative towards you rather than no response. That's not good, right? So I always want to respond, especially when it's a negative review, with love, caring, kindness, grace, apology. If we're supposed to apologize, I mean, you got to discern what that response should be, but always respond. Even the good reviews. And here's what's cool about good reviews. I loved Sunday. It was amazing. My kids loved it there. Thanks for putting on a great Sunday. I'd respond to say, hey, thanks so much for taking the time to our review. Yeah, we love kids. Our kids ministry is exploding around here. Kids have so much fun. Check it out if you want to, you know, if you're reading this review, here's a link to our kids page. You just put a link in there, right? So you responded, that person showed that they got a response. They got an email saying that you responded. So that's pretty cool. I could see it that you responded and you just gave me a link to get to your website. How cool is that? So that's just some easy stuff right there, Bart.
I'm going to address the negative review first and then talk, add a couple more ideas to the strategy about asking people for reviews. Sometimes churches get reviews that are negative, they're completely unwarranted. I remember having a conversation with a church recently that their property is right next to like a 24-hour fitness center or something like that. And they have permission to use the parking lot at the 24-hour fitness on Sunday mornings. And people at the fitness center get angry that the church people are using the parking lot and they write negative reviews about the church because they're using the parking lot. And maybe they're using preferential parking spaces. I don't know. And you know, as a church communications director or as a pastor, you get reviews like that and you're like, what in the world what do I do with this? Is it even worth responding? I mean, based on your feedback there, Jason, you'd say, yes, you would respond. Sometimes less is more. I wouldn't say too much in those cases, you know. Sometimes there are people who have an axe to grind. Look, we live in a world full of broken, hurting, bitter people, and sometimes they like to take it out on a church, and your church might be one that they take it out on. I would say respond in grace, love, and compassion, and then bury it. And you're going to bury it by getting more good reviews, okay? Yeah. The best way to deal with a bad review is to bury it with more good reviews. Now, My strategy, in addition to putting it in the newsletter or putting it on social, is I like to ask people, rather than just leaving a review, I like to ask them to share their story in a Google review. Because a lot of times I've seen guys or gals, they'll ask people in their church to leave a review, and all they do is just go put five stars. They don't actually write anything. I really want people to share their story. I really want people to verbalize, or at least type out, in that review, what makes their church experience so positive, so important for them, for their family. So ask them to share their story in a Google review. It sounds a little less cringy than, hey, will you just leave us a five-star review? That's my personal opinion. I work with a few churches that are taking some of their five-star reviews. They're repurposing them as social media posts. This is what somebody said about their experience with our church. And, you know, Canva's got some great templates that you can use to create these posts, recreate the posts in Canva, and then just put in the caption of that post. How has being a part of Grace Church impacted your life? Share your story in a Google review, and then put that short link that you take from your Google business profile in there. Our little church plant we use for our Connect card on Sunday. This I don't know if this was an original idea, and I don't even know if it's a good idea, but it's what we're currently doing. Is we actually use a QR code on Sundays with a link that goes to a link tree. And on that link tree is access to it's basically like what, four or five buttons on that link tree. One of them is the online giving button. One of them is our current like event schedule, so people know what's going on. One of them is a link to the YouTube channel. One of them is a link to share their story in a Google review. So anybody, any Sunday, who scans that QR code, if they're going to go online to to give or to do whatever they're going to do, they will see that call to action, leave your story in a Google review. And I just keep that in front of them all the time. I've heard of other churches that will actually print out QR codes that go directly to their Google business profile review form, and they'll put them at their welcome center, their information center, and just put it by a little sign that says, how was your experience today? Would you tell us in a Google review? No different than the mechanic shop or the doctor's office or anybody else that, well, actually most doctors aren't asking for Google reviews. The mechanic shop that you go to might be, or a restaurant that you go to might ask you for a review. You can do the same thing. Be creative with it. I think there are ways of getting around making it cringy and ways that are helpful. Last thought on this. I had two pastors independently of each other last summer told me that someone came up to them and told them that the reason they tried their church was because of what people had written in the Google reviews. And I thought, that was super powerful. Again, it's not what you say about yourself. It's what other people testify about you that's going to carry the most weight. So utilize those reviews to do that. Final thoughts there, Jason? Yeah,
one thing on that, I get asked, like, how do we capture people's stories? You know, how do you do that? Well, first of all, you have to ask. But a great tactic is if you guys do baptisms, once they get baptized, as soon as they come out of the water, kind of a thing, and they're drying off or, you know, whatever, try to capture their story. You know, just, hey, what was it like for you to get baptized? What brought you to the point where you said you want to get baptized? Tell me your story, right? And I always encourage churches to do that. And you'll get, if you do baptisms, you'll get stories. And then you know, oh, something's there. Like, you just don't understand what my past was like, you know? And I've had a 20 years of a hard road. It led me to this point. You know, you're not going to say, well, explain to me those 20, you're not going to do that in that setting. But now you're like, can I follow up with you? I'd love to sit down and hear your story, right? So that's another way to kind of, because you could put it on Google for sure. Some people may be a little bit leery about going too deep with their story, but certainly people who just got baptized typically are kind of they're excited about their faith. There's a reason why they just got baptized. So capitalize on that and use that as a way to capture more stories for pushing out everywhere.
I've jokingly said that I was going to add leaving a Google review in our membership covenant. So when you become a member of our church, you must, you know, you've got to be a follower of Jesus. You got to be baptized. You got to be in a small group. You got to serve in a ministry, and you got to leave a five-star Google review. If you haven't left a five-star Google review, you can't be a member. So I'm only half serious about that, half joking. So anyway, well, for those of you who've made it all the way to the end of this podcast, thank you so much for your loyalty. Thanks for listening. We hope that this has been helpful, useful for you. If you haven't yet subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, make sure that you do that so that you don't miss any future episodes. And until the next time, on behalf of Jason Hamrock and myself, Bart Blair, thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is a production of Missional Marketing. Our goal is to help churches grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications. For more information, visit our website at missionalmarketing.com.